I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Are you still listening to the Guitar Nerds podcast for free? Well, why not throw a few pennies into the hat at patreon.com/guitar nerds? You can support the podcast from as little as $1 a month. And at the $5 a month tier, you get access to an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week, as well as bonus episodes like Joe Branton's Rant On and exclusive interviews. Check it out at patreon.com/guitar nerds. And welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Jay Cross.
Hello.
And Joe Branton.
Hello.
There's no quiz again this evening. I know we've been hyping it up, and I promise this is not some sort of crazy marketing ploy that put the quiz off every week, and maybe there'll never be a quiz.
I wish it was a marketing ploy, because that would have been a great idea.
If we just every week go, oh, it's the quiz.
That would have been excellent.
Next week's
marketing.
The quiz. You better listen next week, because it's the quiz.
Is it the quiz next week or not?
Yeah, it is definitely the quiz next
right.
week.
I tell you what, I wish I'd known that it wasn't going to be the quiz this week before I spent literally all day yesterday writing the quiz.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't leave my house yesterday because I spent all day writing the quiz.
I'm quite looking forward to your quiz.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good. I was going to say, Matt and I can't make it this week to pod. So
he's busy.
The quiz has been pushed back again for, what, third week in a row?
Something
no,
like that.
No, second week.
Second week in a row.
Well, maybe third.
Third week, yeah, I think it's third.
Am I the only one to have written two quizzes? Because I want to.
Well, this is the the time it's coming. I'm the only one to not ever have won a quiz.
Yes. You wrote the first one, though.
I wrote the first one, and I was gifted the last one. I did the last one, didn't I? I hosted it
so
anyway.
You have written two, then?
Yes, I have written two. Oh, yeah,
but how many have you won?
No, zero, yes.
Okay, how many have I won?
Two?
Two,
yeah.
Right, okay. I just wanted to double check, make sure that we're...
who had the best round, though? Because my quiz had the do an impression of each other, and I think probably one of our best ever segments.
I didn't like that because my voice sounds like this, and it's very difficult to make it sound like anything else.
Oh, hello there. I'm Jay Cross. Hello there. Hi, friends.
Captain Squeaky.
Someone actually called you Captain Squeaky last week.
Yeah.
Anyway, lots of fun stuff coming up on the show today to make up for the fact that there's no quiz. We've got new guitars from PRS, Joe's favourite. Plus, we've also got some new Fender pedals, some Fender bass amps, and the first ever vertical pedal from Zvex. Not vertical as in, you know, it goes up in the air. I mean, it's not like
you said this earlier and I thought you actually meant vertical and I was like, this I've got to see.
So what, it's just got a really small footprint?
Yeah,
it's like
it's
a
just
tower.
Really tall, just absolutely
that's
useless.
That's what I thought it was. I was like, that sounds genius.
It's like a Coke can.
You can't close your pedal board.
Yeah, no. And you just got one little skyscraper sticking up from the rest of the board. Anyway, it's been a fairly busy week. I've not had that much time to do that much guitar playing, but you guys have been up to loads of stuff. Joey B, you've been putting pictures up of the Down Electro basses in the Facebook group. How did you get your hands on them, and what were you thinking?
Well, I've got to shoot a...
I don't mean what were you thinking, like why were you doing that? More just like, what are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, they were good. So I've got to shoot like a music video, and I've got to wear like a black suit, and everyone's wearing black. And so I was like, I want a black bass for this. And I want it to be like, we're going through a bit of a, hence why I was playing that thing earlier. I'm going through quite a Joy Division sort of phase at the moment.
The listeners didn't hear that. the Joy Division thing that you were playing earlier.
Yeah, I know, but it's really good. Anyway, so I wanted something that was retro. So I was thinking about retro basses that are black, and I was bidding on a couple of like old Baldwin basses, okay, that were hollow bodies, and then I was like, oh, these hollow bodies, they're just not going to deal with the amount of drive I use very well, even though I love hollow body basses. I love how they sound. I know deep down that they're not going to be great live, because I was looking at things like the Epiphone Jack Cassidy bass. Listeners, yeah, you should check that out. That's got to be one of the most interesting basses for sort of, for you know, like £700-ish. A totally cool, unique-looking bass. You know, that used to be the Les Paul bass, the Jack Cassidy signature, yeah, model. That was, yeah, originally... But it was short scale when it was that.
It was originally a guitar. The Les, right, Paul signature is what, yeah, it was called. Like an offset 335 style, gold top only, two weird cream soap bar pickups in there.
Yeah.
Then they did a bass version called the Les Paul signature bass.
Yeah.
And then that then became the Jack Cassidy.
Yeah, that's right. There are some great demos by Chicago Music Exchange of the original Les Paul signature, listeners, that you should check out. But yeah, the new Epiphone Jack Cassidy bass is like a long scale version of that and is super cool. But yeah, I was looking at a few things, and I eventually came to, I was like, Dan Electro, they do cool black instruments and they're super retro. So I got in two, because they have two basses in their catalog at the moment, the DC-59 and the Longhorn, which are two instruments couldn't be sort of further apart.
They're pretty different. So yeah, from my understanding, the 59 is a full scale bass.
That's
and
right.
The Longhorn is a short scale bass.
Actually, not just short scale. It's actually a 29.5-inch scale.
That's too short. That's a ukulele.
Yeah, that's shorter than a short scale bass. So it is very, very short. So whilst I appreciate I only have to mime in this video, the chances of getting a 29.5-inch scale bass down to D standard and occasionally drop A are very slim.
Do you think your fans would feel cheated if you played that in the video and didn't use it live?
Yeah.
Well, of course, you can't use another bass live because you've got your last ever gigging bass.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, well, we'll see. But,
Joe Branton potentially going back on his word?
No.
Surely not.
Oh, no.
Why don't you just get Stonefield to knock up a black bass for you?
He won't do colours. He loves his wood. He'll only...
Could you not?
He'll only do natural tones, sort of. Okay, all right.
Fantastic.
Okay, guys.
But, you get no one noticed.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it's good. But yeah, the DC-59 is totally cool, because of course the DC-59 is probably the most well known shape. And I was really tempted. Do you remember that thing that I think it was like a BBC thing where they got Jimmy Page, The Edge, and Jack White together?
Yes. It wasn't a BBC thing, but yes, I remember it, yeah.
It was really interesting.
Yeah.
Like, it was really interesting. Well, not interesting to see The Edge. He was just really annoying and showing up as being one of the most styleless men of all time. But Jimmy Page was incredible.
It's
my boss
you're talking about.
Yeah. Jimmy Page was incredible. He was there in his, like, in like a long Undertaker's jacket with, like, a black suit on, and he was playing this old, battered up, proper old Dan Electro DC-59, and it sounded like it was so brash. I appreciate this is the guitar and not the bass, but it just looked so cool. So I was very tempted by the DC-59. But
and Fat Mike, of course, from NoFX.
Yeah, and Fat Mike played one. I wanted one for years, like a glitter finish DC-59 back when I was into punk rock. It was so cool. He was the only person doing that. I think it's such an underrated bass and so hard to get hold of as well. But I love how much people hate the Longhorn.
It looks like an onion.
I love it. I used to have a Hondo Longhorn, which was a long scale, and we've spoken about that before. But
you shouldn't have sold that.
I shouldn't have sold it. It was a terrible, terrible decision, but a great bass. So I've been in a dilemma between the two for ages, and I eventually settled on one. What do you think I should have chosen?
59 every time, because the Longhorn is stupid. But if it's only for miming in a video... The Longhorn is quite distinctive.
If it was only for miming in the video, why did it matter that the Jack Cassidy wouldn't deal with the
Exactly. It didn't, for the same reason that it doesn't matter that. But, well, mainly because I'd probably have to buy this, you know, because there's quite a risk of damaging it in the video, so I can't.
When
really
has
just
that ever
it.
Ever stopped you doing anything before?
Yeah, true. What do you think I should have got?
A P bass.
I mean, you should have just got a black Matt Freeman P bass or something like off eBay.
No, I thought about getting a P bass, but I'd need like a matching headstock and not a maple neck. Like, I just wasn't that. A P bass is just a bit boring. You just look a bit like everyone.
I mean, in that case, you should absolutely get the 59 because the Longhorns don't actually play that well and they don't actually sound that good because there's not enough string tension.
Yeah. Well, I did make a decision and I went for a Rickenbacker 4003.
Of course. Oh, right. I saw the picture about that. Yeah.
So you've gone from looking at basses that are what, £300-£400, something like that.
Yeah.
To at something that's what, £1,799.
No, £2,300 for the 4003. The 4003S is £1,799. And yes, actually, what I've basically done.
Can you even buy those though?
Yes, you can. Off of AndyBaxterBass.com. Okay. He's got a few in stock.
See, the only person who does, surely he's not the only person who does them, because funnily enough, when I don't know if we talked about this, I don't know if you talked about it whilst you did one of the NAMM roundups that I didn't listen to,
probably not.
The did you see the Rickenbacker stand at NAMM?
I did not.
Only briefly.
The Rickenbacker stand at NAMM had some real weird oddities there, including a bunch of left-handed five string 4003s. Yeah.
Thing is,
really
about,
weird.
What?
Yeah.
The thing is about Rickenbacker, both times I've been to NAMM, they've had tons of guitars on display. And then when you like get home and are like, okay, yeah, brilliant. Where can I get one then? Nowhere.
Well, that's because they've only made one of each. They won't sell them to anyone because, well, what are they going to show at the next guitar show?
Well, you know, there's always been a struggle to get Rickenbackers, especially sort of over here in the UK. Like I was speaking to someone on our Instagram page earlier today and they were, because I've posted a picture of the 4003 and someone was like, oh yeah, my bass player has got one of these on order that he ordered in July.
It's probably the one you've got in your hand.
Maybe. Well, actually, the reason I've got this one is because it's B-stocked. It came in damaged, so it's temporarily B-stocked, so I'm borrowing it. Because actually, at £2,300, that's too much money for me. And
But they've always been that money.
How, I know.
But the other side of that is if they can't make as many as they need to, you know, and I don't mean to get all economics on you here, but if the demand is outweighing the supply, then of course they're going to charge loads of money.
Well, actually, the Rickenbacker recently lowered the amount of guitars they produce because
lowered it.
But the reason
gone
behind
from
it,
two a day to one a day.
Well, it's to do with the emissions.
That's right. Yeah,
because they won't move the company out of California.
Exactly,
and California has got some of the strictest emissions taxes in the world. Yeah. My understanding is that was first brought in by Governor Schwarzenegger.
The governor.
you can actually make, they could make any amount of guitars and finish them in nitro. They just have to pay an additional tax.
Yeah.
But rather than paying that additional tax, they have opted to
put the price up.
To produce less and put the price up. Whatever. But the good thing is they also do a 4003S. Mm-hmm. And the difference between the 4003 and the 4003S is that the 4W3S is dot inlays and it's not bound. You don't have any binding. So
yeah. And isn't it a thinner body as well?
It's not thinner, but it's like rounded off.
Yeah, it's rounded off. And I certainly think it looks less iconic, but you say that Chris Squires was an S, a 4001S, so was McCartney's.
Yeah, all the famous Rickenbackers were the S models. Because they didn't actually introduce the non-S models for quite some time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'd have to look up the history again, but the ones that you see that are in,
but
you know,
think
all
of
the iconic players,
those triangular inlays as being so.
They've done that for a long time, but I think, you know, in the 60s and stuff, I don't think they had that. I think it was that they just had the regular
4001.
You know, dots. 4001S, yeah. So they didn't have the, you know, the inlays and things. I was thinking about Rickenbacker and you specifically. The bass that you should look out for is the 3000.
Is that the one you used to have?
No. So I had a 4000, which is like a P bass. It was Rickenbacker's take on a P bass. Single pickup, not in the neck or bridge, but somewhere in the middle. And they're a cool bass. They're, again, you know, they're pretty stripped back. You know, there's no binding. There's none of the crazy inlays. It's just dots. But the one that you should look at is the 3000, which is a bass that most famously played by Manny from the Stone Roses, but also one of my favourite bass players ever, Patrick Costello from Dillinger Four, also played one.
Oh man, this looks, I'm having a look. look at it now. It looks cracking.
So there was two different models, the 3000 and the 3001. The 3000 is short scale.
Yeah, looks it.
And very much falls in between your sort of Dan Electro and Rickenbacker, you know, stylings, in that it's short scale. It's got kind of like double cut body, I guess, more like a sort of Dan Electro 59. Looks almost like Epiphone Coronet, that sort of vibe.
Yeah, it's got that sort of Gibson Ripper sort of
grabber. Yeah, I'm just looking at a picture now in a kind of Carina type finish, and it looks like a grabber.
They're not mega money. You can still actually get those for something that's reasonable. The problem is there's not many of them about.
Yeah,
and they tend to get snapped up really quickly because of Manny. Right. But they're not huge money because they never were huge money. I think they were designed as like a more studenty.
Yeah,
option.
They look it
because they might even be. No, they're not bolt on.
Their headstock on them, none of the headstocks were capped or matching.
Yeah, they're just like a plain headstock. But
1400
yeah.
quid on Reverb, the last couple have gone for.
There we go.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That kind of bass. Yeah, and that would, you know, I know you like the short scale and if you want a Ricky, that's a good option. But, okay, well, let us know what you actually pick for the video then.
I'm definitely going for this 4W3, but I'm thinking, I've loved it. And do you know what? I've never really sat down and played a 4W3. I think they were never in the shop, really. We were going through like an interim period of them.
And they've always been so pre-sold.
Yeah, always pre-sold. So I just never sat down with one. And I realised that when I'd sort of had this one at home and I was sitting down playing it, I was like, oh, this might be the first time I've ever really sat with one. And I was like, this sounds fantastic. I absolutely loved it. It was so clangy and it was such an effort to play, and I loved that. It was
that is my thoughts on them. They're very clangy and they are an effort to play.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
I take it you haven't taken off the like pickup cover?
No.
Because you can do that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I see. Oh, I wouldn't want to, no. But,
okay. Yeah, that would just do my head in. Same as with tellies or any bass, really. Take that straight off.
Oh,
yeah.
Really? Oh no, I'd keep it on. I like it. No. It looks great.
Because you can't play it with a pick.
What happens when you bash your hand when you're playing it properly?
Yeah, you can't play it with a pick if you have it like that.
I imagine so. Well, it's a perfect place to rest your palm, isn't it?
Lazy, no. If you ask me. Okay. Lazy.
Because you can't do that and mute at the same time, because you'd want to rest your palm there and play in front of it. But if you want to mute, then you'd play behind it. Yeah, for me, when I had a Rickenbacker, I took that off straight away and then realised that Rickenbackers aren't for me at all anyway, and then sold it straight away.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it's a nice, you know, alternative to a P bass, but really just get a P bass.
Yeah, no, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love a good P bass, but this thing's, I can't believe I haven't realised sooner.
Talking about P basses, Jay Cross, you did a gig this week.
I did.
What did you give a run out?
My P bass,
of course.
Yeah. So I started this band.
Oh, is this Top Shelf?
Top Shelf.
That is a fantastic band name.
Well, this actually came up during the show. Someone, I can't remember who it was, but whilst we were talking, we were like, oh yeah, we're called Talk Shop. Someone yelled Chip Shop. And and we all stopped and went, that is a fantastic name for a band. Really wish we'd called our band Chip Shop. So we started this band well over a year ago, and we recorded a demo in January of last year. But the drummer plays in this cool band, and they were off on tour for like 6 months. And then I started at Fender, and then a friend of the podcast, Dan Grace, who also plays in this band, also started at Fender about 6 months after me. And it just, life had been really hectic, so we haven't really done anything for ages. And then kind of out of the blue, this show came up, and we're like, yeah, okay, we'll give it a go. And it was really fun, actually. It went better than I was expecting it to go. We didn't mess up too much.
What did you play through?
I played through my bass rig of my bass amp and Mark's bass amp. My bass and Mark's bass.
So what was it? Your Mark bass?
Little Mark.
So, but it's the first.
It's the best one.
It was really funny. The headliners, the bass player also used a Little Mark, and
the same series.
No, one of the modern ones. One of the red face ones.
One of the inferior ones.
Oh, the what's the red face one? It's called like the Big boom, the boom, the big bottom, the
I think
bass,
it is like big boom
bomb,
or something
bomber,
like.
Boomer,
something like that. Little boomer, little, or
no. Yeah,
little. Anyway, he had something. He had one of the Mark bass amps, and it was one of the red face ones. And I put the little Mark down, and then put his one on top. And he came over, and he was like, "Oh yeah, we got there now." I was like, "Oh, it's a Mark bass, you know, similar to your one." And he went, "Oh yeah. Oh, these are great, aren't they? They're, you know, really light and everything." And I went, "Pick that one up then." And he went, "Yeah, okay." And he like went with one hand, as you can do with these now. And he just couldn't lift it because they're so heavy.
Well, because it's actually solid state.
Yeah,
they're a totally different kettle of fish.
Completely.
It's just a digital imitation of what was once a great amp.
Mark bass is fantastic. But I do now have another bassman on order.
Oh yeah.
Because I had my bassman 135.
Great
that
amp.
For like,
what a great amp.
So did we, I don't know if we talked about this. I don't know if you were there. Maybe you were there. Maybe Mark wasn't there.
Oh, I was there. I think I know what you're about to say.
When I got my, you know, I had that that bassman 135.
Yeah.
Do you remember that I traded my bassman 135 for the old 70s twin that I had?
Oh, yes, I was right there. And you were there.
Yeah. So I've spoken about this a couple of times on the podcast about my my old 70s twin that I had. It was fantastic, but I lived on the third story of a block of flats and it didn't have an elevator. And the amp was way too big and too loud for me. So I bought it because it came into the shop secondhand. And I took it home and then about 3 weeks later played a show with it. And on my drive home, I stopped at the shop and put the amp back in the shop because I didn't want to carry it back up the stairs. But whilst we were at the Birmingham Guitar Show the other week, found out that that amp belonged to none other than Stuart Tate of Tate FX.
he was the one who sold it to the shop.
And it was really funny. He was saying, I had this old Fender Twin. And I sold it to Gak. I managed to get a cracking deal on a part exchange it for a Marshall, quite what they were thinking, let me just exchange it. I've got no idea. And thinking back, I reckon that I was the one who served him, and I reckon that I saw that amp and went, I really want that amp.
Yeah.
I really want that amp. Whatever this geezer wants, I'll just sort him out. It'll be fine.
Fine.
And it turned out to be Stuart Tate.
There we go.
How funny. Very, very funny. But yeah, anyway, I've now got another bassman on order. I sold my one because I wasn't using it and I needed to be able to pay the rent about 2 years ago or something. And now I've got another one on the go, and I'm really looking forward to giving it a proper go out.
They are so good. Not great if you ever need a clean tone, but an absolutely fantastic sounding, gritty, proper amplifier.
Talking about selling amps, Joe Branton, there's something that you wanted to bring up.
Is there?
About an amp being sold. I mean, it's literally in the running order in front of you.
Oh. Oh, yes, absolutely.
Do you see what I have to deal with every week?
I got this running order right here, and I am definitely looking at it. I do not have Facebook open, and I am paying attention. Yes, that's right. So it's been on the group, but our mate Dan from the band Cleft, Dan Wild Beasley, excellent, excellent double barrel surname. Yeah.
His real name is Wild Beasley.
No, his surname's Beasley, but he married a girl called Jessica Wild, so, and they double barreled it as well.
Wow. I mean, that's
it's
fantastic.
Damn good, isn't
Either
it?
Way
it's
around
really
works
good.
Though. Beasley Wild. Yeah. Oh, that geezer's Beasley Wild.
Yeah, it's pretty solid. But anyway, so Dan, we've done some stuff with Dan alongside Boss. I think we've had him on like doing a pedal rundown, and of course he comments on the group quite a lot, but Dan's posted a few times on there because Dan has he's got a couple of brain tumors, and he's having some
you said that in such a like flippant way, like there were a couple of pedals. He's got one of them, you know, he's
got one of them
brain tumors.
But yeah, Dan's got a couple of brain tumors that he's having experimental treatment over in Turkey. I think it's Turkey. I think so. Anyway, he's having some treatment over there, but it's super duper expensive. And basically, the first time round when this happened, all the bands, like my band and Dan's band, loads of other bands, we all got together and we raised as much money and we sold all our merch and gave it all to Dan's charity to make sure we could have the first round of treatment, which cost $50,000. But we managed to do that. Anyway, he now needs a second bout of treatment. So we're doing it all again. Dan is selling some stuff and Dan happens to have some pretty cool mates. So he owns Sam Neil from Biffy Clyro's old Hayden Mofo, which he is selling. Also, like previously, what's his name? The Oceanside fella from Biffy Clyro.
The main fella.
Yeah, the main fella from Oceanside. What's his name?
Sure.
Mike Venart.
Yeah, Mike Venart, who's mates with Dan Beasley. Mike Venart plays in Biffy Clyro as being an Oceanside. But Mike Venart's good friends with Dan, and he sold like his old Fender Esquire, which he wrote all the first Oceanside album on. Sold that and gave it to Dan's charity as well, which was pretty cool. But at the moment, you can get, if you're into Biffy Clyro and you want to help a good cause, you can purchase in the auction the old Biffy Clyro Hayden Mofo.
Who says we don't do anything nice on the Guitar Nerds podcast? Giving that a shout out, you know.
Do you know where Biffy Clyro got their name?
No.
Biffy Clyro got their name. This is completely
true. We've
definitely
talked about this on the podcast before.
Biffy Clyro got their name because...
Which says two things. Firstly, we're quite boring. And secondly, Joe Branton doesn't pay attention to anything we're saying.
Biffy Clyro got their name from... what's his name? Simon Neil.
Yeah.
And one of the other fellas from Biffy Clyro, when they were young, they used to come up with fake Cliff Richard merchandise, and one of the things that they came up with was a Cliffy Biro, and then they turned it into Biffy Clyro. So Biffy Clyro, fantastic spoonerism, thanks very much.
Yeah. Wonderful. Shall we dive into a big old fresh vat of
Nude Apocalypse?
So the biggest news of this week, and it's been teased, well, probably
is that
about,
the quiz has been pushed back
to
next week.
The quiz, of course, the whole guitar world is shocked by the fact that Matt's had to sit out this podcast and the quiz is pushed back. But nevertheless, other things in the guitar world are happening. Probably the biggest news at the moment, apart from the quiz, obviously, is the long-teased John Mayer PRS Strata-like guitar, which is now dubbed the Silver Sky, has finally been released.
It's finally been announced. Yes, they've nursed that one out.
I don't know what that means. I don't think I want to. Who's got the spec?
Sure, yeah, I could go. Okay, so the PRS Silver Sky. So this is a...
It's a Strat, isn't it?
It's a Strat. So I was going to say...
It's not legally a Strat.
It's the ultimate conceptual collaboration between John Mayer and Paul Reed Smith.
Okay.
But yeah, for all intents and purposes, this looks very much like a Strat. Because they have kept, for what it's worth, they've kept a few PRS-y things. That cutaway on the lower horn.
Yeah.
You know, there's like that sort of third dimension on the lower horn that's on
a
most
scoop,
PRS-y.
If you will.
A scoop, yeah. They've kept that, which is pretty cool. Contoured heel. Obviously, it's the PRS headstock. It's actually a reversed PRS headstock.
Oh yeah, I didn't think about that. It is. Yeah, you're right.
They've claimed it's for tuning stability, but you know, of course, that's it's absolutely rubbish. So you're suggesting that all other PRSs don't
not very stable,
whatever then, mate. But yeah, so reverse headstock. It's got like a few other cool things. So different hardware than they've had on any other PRSs. So it's vintage style hardware, although the tuners are locking. And yeah, the whole thing is supposed to be that this guitar is supposed to be specifically inspired by a pair, a 63 and a 64 Strat that they were reviewing. So it is also a 7.25 radius, which is pretty bonkers for a PRS. But this is a super vintage.
I mean, I guess if that's what he plays,
yeah, exactly.
If he plays 63 Strats, then you know.
Yeah.
Having that weird fingerboard radius, up to you, mate.
Yeah.
It is quite stunning how much, you know, it's not like they've made a PRS that's just got three Strat single coils. It's basically got a Strat scratch plate, hasn't it? Which is...
Yeah. And it's quite a lot of money as well. It's £2,200.
I don't think it's that much.
Pounds.
I was quite surprised, actually, that it's not, you know, when you think
about... Well, in line with everything else he's released.
Well, exactly, yeah. I mean, you think about the, whatever it was called, the Eagle or whatever
Triple Eagle?
Something like that. Was, what, 15 grand?
Yeah. Well, and just looking at some of the other stuff that's got John Mayer's name on it at the moment.
Amp.
Well, there's the amp that's expensive. There's a Martin D45, is up on the GAC website at the moment for $12,500.
Oh, I'm not going to be able to flog that one.
The standard model is $4,000, you know, so it's not as expensive as it...
I mean, you consider, you know, it's
There's so much John Mayer stock at GAC. There is going to be a John Mayer flavoured insurance fire sooner or later.
Yeah, someone really hated John Mayer. Thing is, even that doesn't work because they'll just go, yeah, it's you. All the evidence is on this podcast.
Yeah.
So I actually thought it was price-wise was pretty reasonable.
But, so if they were going to do it at this price, the problem with doing it at this price is at this price point, you're competing with Fender Custom Shop, and Fender Custom Shop is blooming good.
Are you though? Can you get custom shop stuff for $2,200 now?
Yeah, you can spend £200 more. It's okay, fine. It's in between. You have to pay £2,400 for a custom shop. This is £2,200. The next closest thing by Fender is £1,800. And the problem is, this guitar will only be as good as the £1,800 stuff from Fender.
How much is a Les Paul Standard these days?
A Les Paul Standard is like $2,400.
$2,500. Maybe more.
See, I would expect, you know, something PRS with the carrying the John Mayer name to be more than a Les Paul Standard.
But so, it doesn't look like that.
Sure.
It's not relicked. The finishes aren't good. It's a white scratch. It's not even like vintage tint, like plate and pickups. It looks cheap.
I think it looks stratty.
Yes. But the problem is that what PRS do well and what makes the sort of people that buy PRS, the sort of dentists that buy PRS, like, they think that flamed maple is a good thing.
A lot of people like
bird's eye. They think flame maple and bird's eye are cool, interesting things, and this has none of it. This has none of the things that PRS players like.
I think they'll have no problem selling these at all, because you've got John Mayer fans, you've got people who want to get into PRS.
I just don't know too many
16
year olds.
Well, no, this is not aimed at 16 year olds.
It's $2,500. It's not going to be bought by 16 year olds. I know that you want to go down the route of being contrarian and but it's, you know, in all seriousness, it's not built for those people.
This guitar is not competing with the Simon Neil Strat, do you know what I mean?
No, this guitar is competing with Fender Custom Shop, who do it much, much better. That's just the problem. Like, for finishing options, this looks very, very plain. This wants to be a Sir more than it does anything else, I guess.
Sure. I mean, it is, you know, it's quite clean. They've obviously not gone for a vintage, but like you said in the kind of blurb, they're talking about it, you know, having vintage features, but it kind of is built like a modern guitar.
Yeah,
so they've kind of achieved what they're setting out to do
potentially.
And for, I think for like someone who's into John Mayer and looking at this kind of guitar, that's probably what they want.
Possibly we'll see. I'm not a big fan of the colors, the sort of silver. I think the silver is a really odd choice.
What colours are available?
So I can tell you, I did the write up on the GAC website, and I genuinely didn't care enough to look.
You're just vomiting onto the keyboard as you were doing it.
I think there's a white, there's a red, and there's a silver. There's a fourth colour. Maybe it's something
black.
Funny. Like, oh, it's a black. Black. It's a black. Yeah.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That's great. I mean, the silver one genuinely looks like an Affinity Strat. I mean, it really does. I don't think there'll be a worse product released this year. I'll go as far as
to
say that.
I'm holding off judgment until I see them, but I think that they're very keenly priced and I think there'll be a huge audience for them.
I'm insisting that GAC don't buy any.
Just your hatred of Mayer spilling over into not only this podcast, but your purchasing decisions. Unbelievable. Now, that's an example of someone doing their take on Fender, I guess. But last week saw the release of Fender doing their take on, well, basically what everyone else is doing with the launch of the Fender pedals. We saw them a bit of NAMM, but Jay, I take it you've had a bit more time to spend with them. What's the verdict?
I actually haven't had a huge amount of time to spend with them, to be completely honest with you.
More than we did at NAMM, which was like 5 minutes.
Yeah, sure. So we had one set that came into the office a little while ago and then immediately went out to someone's house. Well, to shops and stuff for demos. So I had a little bit of time with them, but not a huge amount of time. But I will say, very, very pleasantly surprised. I think that everybody was expecting, when it was announced, oh, Fender's doing pedals, I think everyone, their minds went back to either the Moore-alikes that we saw maybe, you know, 3 years ago,
yeah,
or the
great
competition series that
not
we
great
saw,
either,
you know, 4 or 5 years ago.
Before the competition series.
I mean, they weren't great pedals, let's be honest. And what's happened here, I think, is Fender have kind of realised, you know what, if we're going to do this, it needs to be done right. So they've been designed by a guy called Stan, who works for Fender, has done for a long time.
Stan.
And he has been involved in a number of high-profile Fender releases. I can't be 100% sure, but I think he maybe designed the... it wasn't the Hot Rods. What was it that he did? He's done something. I can't remember what it is.
He's done at work. He's done something in his job. He's done something.
Yeah, he was he was an amp designer.
He did the bass breakers, I think.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. That's what I think it's the bass breakers. I'm pretty sure
it is the bass breakers. Yeah.
Okay. Fine. There we go. This isn't really my product line, but you know, it's just
I'm glad you know it inside out. So my takeaway from the NAMM show was that personally, I wasn't too keen on the drives, but I was listening to them through a Mustang with headphones.
Yeah, sure.
So I've gone back and listened to some of the video demos, not from NAMM, but like the other stuff that people have put out, and they're actually quite impressive.
So just to give a quick rundown of what there is, first off, there's a buffer, which has got a high-frequency control that lets you... The idea behind that is if you're switching between guitars live, so if you're playing a Strat and then the next song is you're playing a Les Paul or something, and you want to bring some of the high frequencies back in, you can do that with that. So that's quite cool. There is the Benz compression pedal, which isn't, I mean, well noted, it's not my favourite type of effect, but I do like that there's a lot of the sort of modern features with this.
You love the squeeze.
You're annoyed because I've called it an effect, aren't you?
Oh, no, sorry.
Oh, okay. No. I got a look from Joe that made me think something was up. But so the thing that I really like about it is you've got a blend knob on the compressor, which is, I think, so important nowadays. I don't understand why there are compression pedals coming out that don't have them.
I thought the Benz compressor was one of my favourite products in this lineup. I thought it was really good.
Yeah,
really
it's definitely compressor. Strong. Definitely strong.
Then moving over to the drives.
I can't believe how affordable it is.
That's the other thing, is that the whole range is super, super affordable. Yeah. Super affordable. And actually, I think they're comparatively more affordable in Europe than they are in the US.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. However, that aside,
What's the price on the compressor quickly?
like £120, I think.
Okay, I don't even think it's that much, is it?
Really? It might even be, might be less.
I remember hearing this at NAMM and thinking that it was pretty nice. Again, my kind of opinions are clouded by the fact that it was a Mustang on headphones.
It's £95.
Well, there we go.
And it's not just the price. Like, these things, for £95, I expect something super basic. The chassis on these look great. Like, the sort of brushed aluminium. The battery packs being in the bottom, not the underside.
Yeah.
So that you can change batteries without taking it off of a board.
The battery is in, the battery compartment is like a flip down thing at the, it's like the base of the pedal.
Yeah.
Where it would be stood up if it was a vertical pedal.
Yeah.
that bit flips down and you can just plug a 9-volt battery into it like that. It's a really, really neat design. Really neat design. Yeah. And the other thing that all of these pedals share is they've got little LEDs in the knobs. Oh. So if you're playing in a dark venue, you can actually see where the position of each of the lights
is. But you can turn those off as well if you find them too much. And this is what I love about this range is, I absolutely wrote these off from the start because it's Fender doing effects.
Yeah.
These pedals have been designed from the ground up. And I think Fender have done a very good job there. The marketing that they've provided that include an interview with the fellow who's put these together, and you realise, this isn't Fender
like an OEM product.
This isn't just them making a buck. They've employed a guy, and this guy's gone, I love gear, let me design these effects from the ground up to have everything that they need, to the level of having LEDs in the controls and a battery compartment that's a bit more useful. Like, he's designed these to solve problems.
Yeah.
And it's not just in physical features like that. I think the actual features on the pedals themselves, things like having blend controls on the compressor. I'm sure you'll get on to the delays and the reverbs, which I think are both very intuitive as well.
So moving on, the next one in the range is the Pugilist Distortion. And I actually think this is the pick of the bunch for me. Out of the six that were announced, I think this is the one that is the best value in terms of what it is and what it does. So again, these are like the £85, I think it is.
So cheap for you.
And one of the things that you've got on here is there's two drive circuits in there, and you can either run them A into B, or you can run them in series, or you can blend them together. So there's a blend knob in there, but
there's only one on off switch.
There's only one on off switch. That's correct. But you don't have to have both going. You can have one of them. Gains turned down.
Yeah.
For example, I think this is absolutely fantastic. Or if you only want to have one, you can just go blend all the way to A or all the way to B.
That's the way you would do it, rather than turn the gain down.
Yeah,
you
completely.
Blend
one
way or the other.
I think that, like, I've never been a huge fan of like high gain drive, and this isn't really a high gain pedal, but distortion pedal. I've always preferred drive pedals.
Yeah.
For me, this is genuinely one of the best.
This doesn't sound like a distortion pedal to me.
Right.
This sounds like a great drive pedal. When I tried it out. I don't care about distortion pedals. I don't use them. I'm not in a punk band.
But neither do I. When I first saw it, I thought, this is going to be the one that I'm going to write off the most. And honestly, I think it's so, so good.
I thought
so
it sounded
good.
Brilliant.
The thing with distortion pedals, for my ears normally, is that they end up sounding just thin. And this, going back and listening to the demo videos, this doesn't sound thin. It actually sounds quite chunky.
Yeah.
It's nice.
And just to rattle on through with these, there's then the overdrive is the Santa Ana overdrive, which is a twin pedal, two foot switch pedal, which one side can be a drive or can be a boost, and the other side is the drive pedal itself. So you can have two different drive pedals, or you can just have a drive and a boost.
Yeah.
Depending on how you want to play it, that's switchable. Bunch of different voicings on there. Again, really, really cool. Then the two pedals, which are probably going to be most interesting to people listening to the podcast, are the Mirror Image Delay, which I think is a really interesting take on digital delays. So this has the the controls of an analog delay, but in a digital delay.
Yeah, which is something we've seen quite a lot recently, is, you know, voiced like an analog delay,
yeah,
but it's digital, you know, technology that's yeah. doing it.
So there, you don't have super long, you can't make all these, you know, super long swirling delays with it. It's relatively short. Even when it's all the way up, it's still a relatively short delay, but it sounds fantastic.
Have you got a delay time figure there?
I don't offhand.
It's functional, and that's I think what the idea across the board with these pedals is, they're not trying to be mad. Like, if you think about Fender guitars in general, they're functional instruments, and I think they've applied that with these pedals. This delay's not trying to be weird, even though it does have a shimmer option on it, because I think you can run, can't you run analog tape, or isn't there something called modern on it or something like that, and that's that has a shimmer, or am I remembering that wrong?
No, I think that's on the reverb. Moving over to the reverb is the marine layer reverb.
This is my favorite of the bunch, I have to admit.
Really?
Yeah.
So the three voicings you've got on this are whole room or special, and special is the sort shimmer. Of shimmer sound, and it really is fantastic.
Yeah.
Really, really nice sounding. And
they put just enough on these pedals. I like they haven't overdone it. It's just three, just keeping it simple. I like that.
They're really, really good, and I really would. I realize that a lot of people will sort of dismiss what I say about these things because I work for Fender, but I do really think it's worth.
Hey, I expected to hate them. I was looking forward to coming on this podcast and saying
and
what
trashing.
An absolute crop.
Yeah, no, I really think anybody who has a sort of preconception about what these pedals are going to be, just go and check them out. Go and have a look at one of the videos. There's loads of videos online. Go and check some of them out and see what you think. I really think that we could see these pedals appearing on people's boards and start seeing these as the Fender pedals as a real viable option moving forward.
That's what I'm looking forward to, actually seeing them on boards, because, you know, the competition series came out and didn't really do anything because obviously they were just cheap pedals. Mm-hmm. The Moore style ones, I don't think I saw on any boards, whereas this, you know, particularly for me, the compressor and the reverb, they're, you know, how much is the reverb? Have you got pricing there?
You know, I think it's about 160 or something.
I don't
like
think
that.
It's that much.
I think 140 then, but yeah,
making up numbers.
£110.
What
I mean, see, that is now, really, really good for the money.
I kind of feel like, for me, this range has brought me down to earth a little bit again, because I think, like, this year I have been hemorrhaging money on effects, and I think we've gone so far down the boutique effects rabbit hole that I'm kind of at a point where I'm like, £300, £300. I don't think a pedal sounds good if it's below the £200 mark, because how could it? Because why wouldn't
because
someone
Strymon,
charge?
Strymon has been such a needle mover.
Exactly.
Like, it's moved the status quo of what we expect.
Exactly.
Just looking at this, the mirror image delay, £110.
That's mad.
You know
That's
what I mean?
Mad.
Like, what else? A carbon copy's more. I realise an analog delay rather than a digital delay, but what else can you get for that money?
What's that is true, actually. You're thinking about it. Like, what delays can you actually
What's
get for under £100?
Yeah.
Now, Flashback, I think, is
Flashback
more than
that. 2 is £160.
There we go.
Sorry, Tor.
What about the DD3? Boss equivalent? DD3, DD7?
DD3, £120.
Wow.
It might actually be the cheapest delay pedal.
Nah,
DD7.
No,
I mean,
obviously, Moore will have it.
Sorry, I mean of, like, you know, big box style, right. You know, proper pedal, not mini pedal. But yeah, it does seem.
I mean, these are the same. But to give it some context here, this is about the same price as the Dan Electro Billionaire range.
Yeah, I mean, I would suggest they're slightly better quality than the.
Yeah.
The billionaires.
So,
actually saying that,
those
not
billionaires were weighty.
I've not tried the
billionaires. They're metal chassis. They're weighty. I did a video demo for them at work. They were banging. I tell you, that spinning speaker, that was actually a great pedal.
Is there a delay?
No. There's no.
No.
If you were going to do four, this is the weird thing about that Dan Electro Billionaire range. If you were going to do four pedals, what would you have? You've got four pedals in a range.
Yeah, I mean, you just do like drive. Distortion.
Well, no, you'd probably do drive,
like delay,
a modulation, a delay, and a reverb.
Yeah.
That would be what it is. They've done a drive, so they have got that, a boost,
okay,
a spinning speaker, and a tremolo.
Of course.
Those are the four pedals that they thought best sort of represented the name billionaire. But whatever. So yeah, the best one by a mile is the rampable spinning speaker.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. They always did that well. Obviously, the Rocky Road pedal
is exactly the same as the Rocky Road.
So I think overall feedback on the Fender stuff has been pretty good.
Really good. I'm really excited to see what people do with them and where they go and everything. But
They're a big bag of swag.
How about a vertical Zvex pedal?
I don't know how they're going to do this.
Company known for horizontal pedals, in so much that, you know, they're generally wider than they are high,
Chody.
Tall. This is the first one that is taller than it is wide. The Vertical Vexter 59 sound. So again, you know, we're back on someone trying to do the Fender thing. So tell us about it.
So there's a you've got two switches there. You've got boost and a rock. And I believe the rock is based, I think, did I see it was based off of a box of rock? No, because the box of rock is a Marshall sounding
thing. It's a 59 basement.
So it's basically a 59 basement, yeah. And it's called the 59 sound, which that band, the Gaslight Anthem, never really into that band. However, they did one really great song called the 59 sound, where I've seen a wicked performance of them doing it with the big boss man himself, Bruce, coming out and playing guitar.
The wrestler. The big boss man.
No, not the big boss man.
From Cobb County,
Bruce
Georgia.
Dickinson from Iron Maiden.
That's who I was talking about. The boss, of course, Bruce Dickinson, came out and he... The 59 sound is what he did.
That was your best impression ever, I think.
Thank you.
I can't believe Bruce Springsteen did a song with the Gaslight whoever.
Well, because they were basically trying to sound like him. And
yeah.
Guess he wants to be seen as,
and he's from around
the kids.
They're all from Jersey, I think.
This is a take on a 59 Fender.
Yes, and it looks great. Let's see what happens.
Super simple. Not much tone control. Just a master tone, drive, volume, and then you've got a control for the volume of your boost. So it's a dead simple pedal. It doesn't look like the sort of thing I expect Zvex to put out. I would go as far as to say this looks cheap.
I mean, I was going to say it's odd for them to do a kind of amp in a box. This kind of seems a little true to.
Well, they have done it before, because that
they've done it as a horizontal.
The box of rock is a Marshall type pedal, and you know the Jay Maskis pedal. Is that a double rock?
Yeah, which is two boxes of rock. I don't know. It's just something about this seems a bit on the nose to like call it 59 sound. It looks like a tweed Fender.
I mean, the press release also says it is based on a legendary 1959 tweed Fender basement.
Well,
so.
Yeah, but do you know what I mean? That just seems a little too on the nose for Zvex.
They have done this pedal as a horizontal before.
Have they?
The only change is that this is now available as a
really?
Vertical. Yeah, in a previous run. 100%.
Oh, right. Okay, fine. I didn't know that at all. You've completely thrown me then, because like I was saying, I kind of thought this was a bit too on the nose from a company that's
known for more wacky stuff. For ages.
Right.
They've made one before.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, well, it'd be interesting to hear one. This is, you know, obviously... Oh, yeah. Joe's showing me a picture of it right now.
Oh, right. Yeah, I didn't know that.
It'd be interesting to hear this because, you know, this seems to be where a lot of these kind of preamp pedals are heading. Obviously, they're based on, you know, classic amps. And I want to hear Zvex's take on it.
I don't mean to dwell on what we were just talking about, but this pedal is $219.
Okay.
You compare that to those Fender pedals. It's bonkers, isn't it, really?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was very impressed with that reverb. And when you say it's £110.
Mm, yeah.
It does say something. Another area that Fender are absolutely killing it at the moment, according to all reports from Joe Branton, the new Fender Rumble bass amplifiers.
My goodness me. What? How good is it? Okay, so the Fender Rumble bass amp series is a series of bass amps that Fender have had in their lineup for a fair old time, since we've been in shops. They've always been their entry level of bass amps, and every few years they've given them a refresher. They used to look terrible. They used to be all like metal grills.
Well,
and
do you remember the original ones? So the original Rumble bass amps had a sound-sensitive light in the bass port, so that when you played louder, it would flash on and off.
Yeah, yeah.
It would pulse with your playing, basically. Probably the worst idea I've ever seen on an amplifier.
Yeah.
Just because they were actually quite good little amps. They looked bad, but they were quite good, like practice amp through to like medium gigs. I think they did a bass, Rumble 150, I think was the biggest one. So, yeah. You know, get big enough for your kind of starter bass player to go and do a gig with. But even on the 150, you know, imagine turning up at a pub and you're like, all right, guys, here's my amp. Just got it today. Look what happens when you plug it in. And then it's this pulsing red light. It was like we said at NAMM when we saw those Chinese companies that were selling PA speakers that had disco lights built in. That's what this the Rumble series started off as.
Man, that is bad. Well, there's been evolutions of this series throughout the range. But, I mean, generally speaking, the one thing that's been funny about this range, and it's not something that was exclusive to Fender. I think a lot of companies were doing it. The Rumble was available as a 10-watt, a 30-watt, a 50-watt, a 100, a 200,
yeah.
a 300, maybe a 500. There were a lot in them. And certainly last year, or maybe a couple of years ago, they refreshed the series again as a silver face. They made them look really nice. But there were still loads in the range, like loads of amps.
That was 2014.
Yeah, okay. But, you know, there were still loads of amps. And almost this year, I feel like, again, same thing they've done with the pedals. They've sort of had someone go back to the start and go, hold on. Why have we got eight different types of amp, eight different sizes that are all basically only suitable for bedroom anyway? Why don't we just do two, one for bedroom called the Rumble Studio and one for small gigs called the Rumble Stage? So there's two amps in the range, both combos, and it's like, I was like, oh my, it was like a eureka moment. I was like, how?
Yeah, obvious.
Why doesn't everyone do this? Why? This makes so much more sense.
But this is my problem with particularly bass amps, but also guitar practice amps suffer from it. Why would you do a 10 watt, a 15, sometimes companies with 10 watt and a 15 watt,
yeah,
and a 30 watt and a 50 watt. It doesn't make any sense. And we've seen, you know, with companies like the Boss Katana 50, the smallest one they do is the 50.
Well, that's because if you've got a good volume control on it,
exactly,
it doesn't matter whether it's 50. If it's solid state, why does it matter if it's 50 watt or if it's 10 watt?
Yeah, totally.
Just have some good power attenuation, or not power attenuation, just some good volume control.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But anyway, it still might well sound like that we're giving quite a lot of airtime to like entry level practice amps. These are so much more than this, because this is the biggest facelift the amp series has ever had, because for years now that Mustang tech has existed for guitarists, whilst us lowly bass players have been lucky to get like a drive channel on our amps. But now all that Mustang tech is available on the Rumbles. So we've got amp modelling, tons of amp modelling. You've got 59 Bassmen on there. You've got SVT stacks. You've got like Dirty Orange amps. There are loads of effects that you can add to it. Loads of modulation. There's everything in between. There's like Galen Kruger stacks. There's old like acoustic 360s, and they're all really good. I was having a mess around with both of them today. I shot a little video of them at work, and I was like, some of the sounds were absolutely banging. The SVT sounded banging on the stage one, and I couldn't believe how loud it was. Okay. I couldn't believe how loud it was.
What are the wattages on the two?
Couldn't tell you.
Okay, good.
40 and 800.
40 and 800?
Yep.
So 40 for home and 800.
No. 800 for home. Yes, of course. 40 for home and 800 for the stage.
I mean, I know we're praising the fact there's only two amps, but that is quite a jump. It's not a combo, is it? The 800. Surely
it's
not.
It's a combo.
An 800 watt combo.
I don't think it can possibly be 800
it's
watts.
It's called the Stage 800. I don't know. I'll just double check. But that's what it's definitely. Yeah, wattage, 800 watts.
It's an 800 watt combo.
It's an 800 watt combo.
That would make sense as to why it was quite as loud as
was.
But I generally thought it sounded absolutely fantastic. I thought some of the modelling was great. Oh, I tell you what, they had some things like, they had like 59 Bassmen with 18 inch sub as like a, as a thing, and I was like, oh yeah, have that. And it was like absolute trouser flapping. But it was so good. I was so surprised. I expected them to be okay. They were more than okay. They sounded absolutely fantastic. That Rumble stage is absolutely a gigging amplifier.
Well, I mean, yeah, 800 watts.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, it shouldn't be. It's an entry level Rumble amp. They're supposed to sound crap.
How much are they? Do you know?
No, I couldn't tell you.
I'm glad that you spent all day playing through one and didn't once think,
oh, I'll tell you what, I played it through.
I can't tell you. I can't remember what they are off the top of my head, and they aren't actually. Oh, look.
No, they're released tomorrow, but yeah, this podcast is also released tomorrow.
Well, yes, and also GAC have broken the embargo, so they're on their site already.
Oh, that was me.
It's they're 769 quid.
Yeah. Okay.
Or 350 for the 40.
Okay, fine.
So they're a fair chunk of Woola, but honestly, it's worth every penny. It was an absolutely fantastic sounding amplifier. I couldn't believe how good the SVT sounded. I played a Hofner Very Thin through it for the video, which I'm sure is going to get plenty of abuse.
The bass?
Yeah.
Is that all you played through it?
Yep.
Did you really?
The worst thing to demo them with.
No, it sounded so good. I told you, I'm going through a real Joy Division.
Are you trying to get sacked?
No one else is. That's the problem. So, you know, just P-bass through everything.
But the interface on the listeners, if you've used a Mustang app, if you haven't, go and try one out because you absolutely need to buy one. I think more than the Katana, but check out the interface on these rumbles is so intuitive and so good. It was so easy to add effects. I was adding like shimmer delays and weird sort of like very speeding tremolos and stuff, and playing all this weird like Nick Reinhardt-y stuff on them. Oh, it's great. I had a whale of a time today.
Very, very Fendery episode this week, chaps.
Say, yeah, the Fender cast.
It's been not only, you know, actual Fender things, but people trying to do things that replicate Fenders, essentially.
Did I tell you I wanted to buy a Strat? Have I told
you?
Yeah,
you told us that, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You told me off.
Yeah, you shouldn't buy a Strat.
Why not?
Because I don't think you'll use it.
I borrowed one from work the other day, and I was like, yeah, this is great.
But just get a telly. Just get a telly.
I don't like tellies.
What, you're a madman?
I want a Strat. I like that. I like those little off positions. They sound banging.
The Dire Straits position.
Yeah, yeah. I like Dire Straits.
Of course you do. Of course you do. So with that statement, we should wrap things up. Because it's a Fender-heavy episode, we're going to go over to the Patreon episode and talk about some further comments by Gibson CEO Henry Juskovitz. Oh. This week, he's come out and said...
He blamed me.
He said... yeah, he blamed you. No, he said that the guitar industry is stuck in a time warp. So the topic for the Patreon this week is the guitar industry stuck in a time warp? And if so, is that a bad thing? If you want to hear that, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. At $1 a month, you get the regular episode ad-free and early. At $5 a month, you get an extra half an hour every week, like we're going to do this week with the Time Warp episode. Plus, you get access to bonus series like Branton's Rant On and exclusive interviews. At the $10 a month tier, you get your name read out on the regular podcast every week, just like these people have when Joe Branton opens the email and takes a big old breath and attempts to do it in one breath. What song are we doing?
Neither of us could do it last week. Mark got there kind of. I stumbled almost immediately. Yeah. Is that John Mayer? I love John Mayer.
Ernie Cooper, Emery James Baker, Christoph Raptor, Sayed Omar, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Derek Witzer, Monty Cliff, Matt Davis, Aaron Sherman, Blake Weiland, Jake Gray, Christopher Loseth, Juan Correa, Scott Kennedy, Robin Smith, Rob Norbig, Rob Grant, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Carlos Manchester, Michael Blatoms, Mark Kropp, Brad Page, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Laurie Amstis, Jack Godfrey, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, Scott O'Brien, Phil Thompson, Moe Gravett, Colin Anderson! Oh, yes, people, that's what I'm talking about!
Did you take... I thought you took a little breath there. Did you not?
You look like you should have taken a breath.
You went as red as an actual tomato there.
So red. If you want to join in the conversation, go to facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter @guitar nerds, and you can watch our videos at youtube.com/guitar nerds videos. Thanks very much for listening, and we will speak to you next week.
Cheers, gang.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.